Chapter 3. The Wake-Up Call. Zoe wakes up again a few hours later. The previous night's events are still a blur. She remembers making the food. She remembers him arriving. She remembers eating some of the food. And she has a hazy recollection of a kiss and then Mitch being sick. Then she cringes as she remembers his trousers coming off and then falling into the bedroom. Mitch comes in and looks at her somewhat pityingly, as if to say, "Oh my goodness, you really are a mess." "Oh, Mitch, I'm sure I didn't drink that much, did I?" Mitch just snorts and nods his head at her. "But I only had a couple of small G&Ts and a couple of glasses of wine, didn't I?" She staggers out of bed and heads into the other room. She sees the aftermath of being a domestic goddess who not only didn't wash up as she went along, but who broke pretty much every law there was to break. The room is a mess, like the inner contents of her head. The smell of stale wine and vomit is everywhere, and she's heaving as she opens the window. She sighs painfully. Mitch trots into the room, climbs up onto the sofa, and sits right next to the spot where he had shown his quite emphatic disapproval of Robert. He stares at it and her, and his look says it all.
Okay, you were right, I get it. I'm an idiot. I've done it again. I can't believe I let that happen. What is wrong with me? Am I a completely lost cause, Mitch? Should I just end it now?" She gets up dramatically and goes to the window. "I could just throw myself off the roof."
Mitch jumps off the sofa and runs to her side. He jumps up into her arms and licks her face. And this makes her cry.
"At least you love me.
Mitch, do you think I'll ever find a man who loves me as much as you do?" Mitch barks and wags his tail. Zoe spends the entire weekend holed up in her flat. She's distraught. Every muscle hurts, and the feeling of nausea is overwhelming. At one point, she rushes to the bathroom and drops to the floor, hugging the toilet as she retches. The contents of the previous night's dinner re-emerge, mixed in with all the red wine. It's not a pleasant sight. "Why is it?" she thinks. "There are always carrots.
We never ate any carrots."
She's forced to cancel all her well-intentioned healthy plans, such as Pilates and going to the farmer's market, and instead stays in bed watching old tragic movies, bad TV, and listening to her familiar collection of melancholic heartbreak songs. She eats junk food, including family-sized packets of crisps and what remains of the chocolate dessert. In despair, she finishes off the entire bottle of gin and is so exhausted by all the sobbing and catastrophizing that by 9 o'clock on Sunday night, she passes out on the sofa with Mitch at her feet. Ever faithful Mitch has tried his best to cheer her up, but nothing was doing this time. He didn't even get to leave the house. It was as much as she'd been able to do to open the back door and let him out onto the terrace. By the time it gets to Monday morning, her head is pounding. Her temples are throbbing insanely, and even breathing hurts. She's messed up royally this time, she tells herself. She washes her face and brushes her teeth and climbs into the shower to wash off the tiredness, the toxins, and the toxic shame. She stands for a long time with her forehead resting on the wall, weak, dizzy, and dehydrated. She is officially feeling like shit. Once she's dressed, she makes herself some strong black tea. She turns on the radio and is met by the On Our News Bulletin headlines. "Another A&E department in London to be axed. Teenage pregnancies have increased. Obesity now at all-time record levels. Drug-related gangland killing rise all over the capital. Record profits for major banks. Property prices set to decrease. And another minister has resigned from the cabinet due to a sex scandal." And on another note, Katie Twice reveals her latest novel called Intoxicating Love, which is set to be a bestseller. Zoe groans and turns it off. She wonders out loud if the news is always that grim. How is listening to all this doom and gloom going to help start my day? It's so depressing. She suddenly realises that it's late, and if she doesn't get a move on, she'll miss her train. She's very grateful that Olga is scheduled to take Mitch out, as she neither has the time or the energy. Mitch, for once, is understanding. She has to run to the station. Her bag feels as though it's got lead weights at the bottom. Her shoes are too high and uncomfortable, and she's cursing herself for not wearing a sensible pair and changing when she gets there, like all the other sensible women do, and for not emptying her bag out more often. She gets to the station and there's a huge queue to get to the ticket barrier. She patiently waits in the line only to find when she gets there that she's blocked from entering. She's now running very close to the time of her train and cannot believe she has no credit left on her Oyster card. She sees the queue for the self-service machine and wants to weep. She stands dejectedly in yet another queue and eventually tops up her card, but her hands are shaking and she's hoping that no one else has noticed. And although the fresh air has helped a little to clear her head, the nausea hasn't quite yet abated. She misses her train and has 10 minutes to wait for the next one, so she heads to Starbucks in the vain hope that coffee will be the magic cure and sort her out. She can't face her regular skinny mocha latte, so it's replaced with a large black Americano. And although it would have been a wise thing to do, she refuses the offer of a freshly baked almond croissant. It's usually her favourite, but this morning, she really cannot face the thought of eating. She gets to work and can't concentrate. The events of the night and the terrible morning are going over and over in her head. She definitely can't face talking to Letitia and decides to call Sam, her best mate from school, instead. They'd always been there for each other in times of crisis. This was definitely a crisis.
Sam, hey, listen, I really need to see you. Are you free later?
Hi, sweetie, Sam chirps.
Yes, it's perfect timing. The girls from my office are all coming over and we're having a girly Monday night. Why don't you come?
Okay, I won't be drinking though. I feel like shit. I think my life is over.
Wow, this really must be a crisis. Sounds as though what you actually need is a really good stiff drink. I'll have the tequila ready.
Zoe groans, especially as she suspects it might be just the remedy she needs. Right now, anything that can stop her from remembering and reliving the unhappy night, now renamed in her head as the ruining my marriage plan forever event, is going to be welcome. After a torturous day at the office, where the only saving grace is the absence of Letitia, who's out at meetings all day, she heads over to Sam's place. Sam is 5'2", blonde, buxom, and is what could be described as voluptuous. She's married to her childhood sweetheart, Gareth, who she's been with since she was 16. They were married by the time she was 21 and had the children straight away, a boy and a girl. He's a plumber, and her job has her in charge of credit control for the local council. She's super organised, and one of her favourite pastimes is rolling her eyes at Zoe because she hasn't yet settled down and done what she's supposed to. Oh, Zoe, bless you, sweetie. What's happened now? Is it man trouble again? Tell Auntie Sam all about it. Zoe had intended to be strong and make light of it, but the next thing she knows, she's in floods of tears. Sam's horrified. This is not the Zoe she knows.
There, there, Zoe. It can't be that bad.
This makes Zoe cry even more.
That's the whole point. It is that bad. This may be the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Sam grabs the tequila. Here, have one of these. It'll make you feel much better. She hands her a huge slice of chocolate fudge cake dripping in sauce. And have some of this while you're at it. Guaranteed to make you forget all about him. Zoe slams the tequila and digs the spoon into the cake. One mouthful in and she knows it isn't going to help. This is a problem that even chocolate fudge cake can't soothe. The doorbell goes and Sam makes a hasty retreat, glad to be away from Zoe's emotional outburst. She'd never liked demonstrations of emotion like that, even from her children. Three girls come in. These are Sam's best friends from work, known as the gang. There's a lot of shrieking. Where's the wine? We're parched! A hush descends upon the gang when they notice the distraught Zoe sobbing into her tequila. By now she's looking a bit like a panda with mascara running all down her face.
Oh my God, what happened to you, love?
Ugh, it's gotta be a man, says Lizzie.
Zoe sobs. Sandra, Wendy and Lizzie have been friends since they started in the same office. Sandra is medium build and height, is very attractive and dresses well, if a little conservatively. She has beautiful, long, wavy auburn hair and big hazel eyes. She takes care of herself. She runs, goes to the gym, attends Zumba classes, and works out with a PT every weekend. Her husband Pete was charming and good-looking when she met him at her first job, and they were married within the year. Post-marriage, he began to let himself go and put on a lot of weight. He's just happy to go to work, come home and sit in front of the television. He's a bit obsessed by sport, football in particular, and
unfortunately for his health, more watching it, not playing it. He was always a secret porn watcher, and over the years his obsession had increased until it became a full-blown addiction. He was proud of having such an attractive wife, but his interest in her wore off once they were married, and, unbeknown to him, the porn had rewired his brain so he was unable to perform sexually with her anymore. Neither of them ever broached the subject, as they were too embarrassed. So she buries herself in her work and fitness regimes, and he in TV. He always tells her he loves her, because he does in his own way, and somehow they just muddle along. Occasionally she attempts to seduce him, but it is a rare thing, and he's only able to get aroused by closing his eyes and imagining that she's a porn star. On the surface, they appear perfectly happy, but what really unites them is a sense of safety and routine. Wendy is short and a little on the plump side. She's got mousy shoulder-length curly hair, which she always tries to straighten, but not always successfully. And she always has a smile on her face and is pretty in a sweet way. She loves Laura Ashley and has a vast collection of chintzy flowery dresses. The theme extends to her immaculate home too. She has the curtains, the wallpaper and the throw cushions to match. Her style can be best described as girly, but also very neat. Her favourite colour's pink, and she has a large collection of cuddly toys which can be found all over the house. Her husband, Johnny, is a chartered accountant, and they've been together for about 6 years. Neither of them had had much success in love. In fact, they'd never had partners until they met online. The first date was a bit awkward, with neither of them having too much to say, but in time they got used to each other and slipped into a companionable routine. He proposed after a year, and they married very soon after. They'd had their twin girls a year later and were overjoyed, and both felt that their life was now complete. Neither had much ambition for anything else bar a home and a family. And she'd been secretly delighted when she discovered she was having twins, as she'd always wanted to have two children. And this way, she was saved from having to go through another pregnancy. The twins turned out to be a bit of a handful, so she was very grateful that they'd had both sets of parents around to help out. She'd secretly been really happy when it was time to go back to work. And they managed to juggle work, home and each other, thanks to their very well orchestrated and organised routines. Johnny loves his lists. She loves to set everything out the night before. In fact, important events are planned weeks in advance. There's no chance for any spontaneity in this house. And that goes for their sex life too. There is a time and a place and they stick to it. Just makes life so much easier. They're both happy with this arrangement and see no reason to deviate from it. They don't have too much tolerance for disorganised people or people who let their lives get messy. Lizzie, on the other hand, is tall, slender, shoulder-length dark straight hair, with very pale skin and piercing blue eyes, which don't miss a trick. She's dressed in black, with skinny jeans and a black leather biker jacket, and underneath she's wearing a black lace top, with her black spiky-heeled boots that make her even taller and more imposing. She emphasises the rock chick look with lots of smoky black eyeliner and bright red lipstick. She's been married to Dave since she was 18. He was her only serious boyfriend and the only man who could handle and return her sharp banter and acerbic observations. They have matching BMW touring bikes and love nothing more than travelling, camping and enjoying rock music festivals together. She is very down to earth and she says it how it is. She's a real straight shooter but has a heart of gold and would do anything for the people she cares about. If she doesn't like you, she makes no apologies for it. Dave is a police inspector. He joined the police when he left school and rose up through the ranks, which had always been his ambition. He specialises in fraud investigations and is very good at his job. He's tall, well-built and muscular, thanks to 3 tough boot camps a week. Lizzie and Dave have always had an active, playful and passionate love life. Both of them are adventurous and well-suited physically and emotionally. They express their real love for each other through the physical act of affection and sex, rather than in words. Dave is devoted to Lizzie. They'd both wanted to have children, but so far it hasn't happened for them. There've been discussions about going down the IVF route, but nothing has yet been decided. But tonight, all of their focus is on Zoe.
The woman soon settle in with large glasses of wine and copious amounts of cake as she fills them in. They lap up her story.
Nothing like a good heartbreak story to bond the group together, eh? Lizzie says.
They all nod. It appears that each one has their own version of wisdom to impart to Zoe.
There are plenty more fish in the sea, Sandra says cheerfully.
Just go online. That's where I found my husband, and he's a darling, adds Wendy, with certainty.
What you need to do, love, is get out there and shag someone else. That'll help forget about him, says Lizzie dryly. And have another drink. That always helps.
She pours her a large glass of Chardonnay from one of the 9 bottles on the table.
Go on, love. This was on offer at Tesco's. So we each got 3 for 2. Plenty to go round.
Sam puts her arm around Zoe's shoulders.
Oh, bless our Zoe. She was never going to make it up the aisle, were you, sweetie? Always too much of a career girl. All that studying and taking exams. And where has it got you? No man, no kids. And it's such a shame because you're missing out on so much. Lovely girl like you. When I see the state of your love life, it makes me feel so lucky, Sam says, a little smugly.
Yes, I feel so blessed with my lovely Johnny and my 2 little angels, says Wendy.
By now, the wine is really starting to flow. Don't mind them, Zoe, says Lizzie. You enjoy yourself while you still can. Men are hard work and a pain in the arse. My Dave can be a right little shit at times. Comes home late from the station, sometimes pissed after a blowout with the boys, demanding his dinner and then has the nerve to ask me for a blowjob when he gets to bed. Like I'd want to go near it when he's like that. I don't bloody think so. Mind you, she laughs, I have to give it to him. He always makes up for it in the morning. And we do have a good laugh about it. Ha! You can't live with them. Can't live without them.
Sandra turns to Lizzie.
Well, you can count yourself lucky. At least your one wants to have a blowjob. All Pete wants to do is watch the telly. It's football, 24/7.
Came down the other night in a proper sexy underwear outfit from Anne Summers and he just grunted at me and said, get out of the way, love, I can't see the telly.
Well, my Gareth is so good with the children, says Sam. I really can't fault him. And he's so good to me. Even the other night he came in late and was so considerate. He slept on the couch so he wouldn't disturb me. And in the morning he brought me breakfast in bed, toasted muffins and a full English. I know he loves me so much.
He loves to fatten you up so no one else will look at you. That's his game. And anyway, what was he up to? Be sucking up to you like that. Men only do nice things when they want a shag or when they're guilty as hell, says Lizzie.
No, my Gareth is always doing lovely things for me and I know he'd never look at anybody else, Sam insists.
There's an awkward silence around the table. Zoe notices but chooses not to say anything.
Don't you listen to them, Sam, Wendy pipes in. Your Gareth is crazy about you and he'd never stray. Him and my Johnny are 2 of the most decent blokes you could ask for. I know my Johnny isn't the most exciting man in the world, but you can always rely on him. He's like clockwork. And you know what? I know just where I am with him.
We all know where you are with him, love, Lizzie retorts, especially on Saturday afternoon when the kids are at their granny's. Missionary position on the bed, 5 minutes, earth moving, all over for another week.
Wendy slaps her. I'll have you know that my Saturday afternoons with my Johnny are my favourite time of the week. We don't all need rampant sex all of the time. Bit of a go and a nice cuddle does me fine. Just because you think you're Samantha of Sex and the City.
Lizzie laughs. You're just jealous. I'll have you know that it's good for your health to have a good shagging on a regular basis. Dave might be a shit when he's pissed, but at least when he does get it up, he knows what to do with it.
I've forgotten what it's like. If I didn't have my rabbit, I'd be in a mental home by now, says Sandra.
Oh, for God's sake, says Sam. Can you not talk about anything else but sex?
No, they all shout in unison.
I never should have had sex. Not on the 3rd date, Zoe moans.
3rd date? I shagged my Dave after the first 5 minutes. Never did us any harm. I think you should just forget about him and move on.
But, Zoe protests, you don't understand. I was sure he was the one.
The one? Oh, Zoe, Sam says. Never heard you speak like that before. You have got it bad, haven't you? Here, have some more cake.
She doesn't need cake. She needs another drink, says Lizzie. Have another glass, love. Chin up, buckle up, and go get your man.
Zoe nods at what, at this point in the proceedings, seems like very wise advice.
She grabs another drink.
As the evening progresses, the girls get more and more drunk. Zoe starts to feel worse and worse by the minute. Listening to the girls rambling on about their men and their children reminds her that she's single, has been single for a very long time, and at this rate is likely to be single for the rest of her life.
"Okay, girls," says Zoe, "I'm going to need your advice. Have any of you read the laws of dating?"
"That crock of shit," says Lizzie. "You don't want to follow that rubbish."
"Shut up," says Wendy. "That's the way I got my Johnny to marry me."
"I used it as well," says Sandra.
"Yeah, and look where it got you," says Lizzie. "Best friends with a battery-operated toy."
"Don't you listen to any of them," pipes in Sam. "I think you should join the badminton club. There's a great social scene down there and plenty of single-eligible men. You can get fit at the same time and it'll be fun. Me and Gareth go along all the time and the people are lovely."
"I think you'll find, my lovely, that it's Gareth that's down there all the time when you sit at home and look after the kids," Lizzie butts in.
"No," says Sam. "I get to go down there too. And anyway, I'm happy to be at home with the kids. They need me. So Zoe, next time we're going down there, you must come with us. You'll love it."
Zoe couldn't think of anything worse than a night out with Sam and Gareth. He'd already made not very subtle advances on her the last time they were all out together. Afterwards, he had apologised and blamed the beer, but Zoe had made sure to avoid him ever since.
"Look, love," says Lizzie, "if you want him, just tell him. Don't bother getting into a big flap about it. He's only a man, for God's sake. And if it doesn't work out with him, just find another one. There's plenty of them out there."
"Yes," whines Zoe, "but I wanted that one."
Suddenly, the conversation is focused on the latest series of Love Island and who was with who. Realising that she has no idea what they're talking about and no desire to know either, she makes her goodbyes and heads, very wobbly, for home. She manages to catch the last tube. She's aware that she is really drunk and is feeling really maudlin. Every thought is negative. She's feeling ugly, unlikable, and a total failure. She glances up to see a young couple totally engrossed in one another and oblivious to everyone else. She watches the way the guy looks at the girl with total adoration, and when he leans in for a big smoochy kiss, she starts to cry.
"That's the way Robert looked at me on date number 1 and 2. It was all going so well when I followed the laws. I'm such an idiot. Now he's never going to look at me in that way again." Her sobs get louder.
The girl catches her eye, smiles at her and asks if she's okay.
"No, I'm not okay. Man of my dreams and my future husband just broke up with me."
"Oh, you poor thing. That's terrible. How long were you together?"
"We were on date number 3,
Zoe says through her tears. The couple look at her shocked. The guy says,
How did you know he was the man of your dreams after just 3 dates? "He was perfect in every way. He was my perfect man. I'm never going to meet anyone like him again. I messed it up. I didn't follow the laws. I always mess it up."
She continues to sob loudly, and the couple start to get a little embarrassed for her. Zoe realises she's at her stop and staggers up, just managing to get out the door. The young guy calls out after her,
"Don't worry, there's someone out there for everyone. You'll find him."
Zoe thanks them through the window and waves as the tube pulls away. She wends her way back home, managing to stay upright, but swaying and staggering as she goes. Mitch is waiting in the living room for her. He can see straight away that she's drunk again, but suspends his disapproval as he can see that she's very unhappy. He wags his tail and gives her a big sloppy kiss when she slumps onto the sofa. He runs off and comes back with her favourite fleecy pyjamas and drops them at her feet. He stares at her expectantly, cocking his head from one side to the other. She opens the back door to let him out. As she looks out over the skyline, Mitch does his business and shakes his head at her.
"Okay, Mitch, I get it. I need to go to bed. You're right. And I need to change my life. I can't go on like this. You're right about that too."
Mitch barks back in agreement. He'd been thinking that very thing for quite some time and is happy that the penny has now dropped. She wearily drags herself to the bedroom, drops her clothes on the floor where she's standing, pulls her pyjamas on, and falls headfirst into the bed. She pulls the covers over her head and passes out.
Mitch watches her sadly and sighs before climbing up onto the bed, falling asleep at her side.